What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening to the Feminist Bar Podcast.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What's good? What's popping? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast, baby, with your host, Tina Tuemaka, and my guest, Yasha.
Hey, girl.
Hi, Tina.
How you doing?
I am alive. I am good. But I'm alive. How are you?
I'm okay. Well, it's 8 a.m., so that's a good place to start. So welcome to... the Feminist Bar, to everybody listening, welcome to the first episode of 2023. It's the 5th of January and I'm behind the mic. Can we just hear it? Can we just... So, yes, exactly.
No, I think it's good. I think it's great. You're starting the year strong.
Starting strong. Yeah. So today we have an episode I've been wanting to do for a while, but I think the reason that I hadn't done it like up till now is I knew I want to talk about feminism. I knew I want to talk about family and community, but I just wasn't sure how I wanted to talk about it. But I think when I made like my holiday episode, which I should have made you listen to for some context, I was like, I think this is the right way to do it. So today we're going to be talking about like bringing feminism into our communities. I think I'll stick to the word communities because some people have chosen family, some people belong to different clusters of people, so I think the word community is more inclusive. So yeah, the first thing I want to talk about is the fact that we are the adults now, right? For a long time, we were the children, right? We were just participating in whatever we were brought into, whatever we were subjected to. But now, like, we are the custodians of traditions, you know what I mean? Like, we are the adults. We set the norms. We set the values. And maybe just a question for you before we start, because I didn't send you this particular question, is what is something that you want to change in the community that you grew up in, and as you create and become a custodian of your own community, what is something you want to make sure is there that wasn't there as you grew up?
Oh, that is a loaded question. Wait, can I swear on this podcast? Just so I know anything.
Yeah.
Okay, good. This is a fucking loaded question. No, you know, I think the past year, like I came back August 2021. Back to Zim, and then I've been here for the past year and a half, and you know, there's that reverse culture shock and you thinking about like how you fit in and back home and your vision. I think if there's anything I've learned in terms of this previous year, because last year had hands, oh my gosh, especially familiarly, community wise, just a lot of things were happening. I think one thing I want to constantly bring up in my communities and hopefully last is the legacy of openness and transparency and really learning to be a better person in every sense of the word. If you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
I think that especially like familiarly, like culturally, when it comes to like parents and elders, it's very much do as I say, not as I do. And there's no empathy, there's no honesty about certain things. There's even like just the openness of wanting to even talk about therapy, talking about abuse, talking about things. Yeah. I think I've had to force people in my community to be like, listen, we cannot continue doing these things. We cannot continue acting like, you know, like, and also with age too. It's like, I'm a grown-ass woman. Like, yes, like I'm home, but like, we cannot pretend like things that happened in the past don't affect us now, and what can you do to be better? So yeah, definitely a legacy of honesty, communication, openness, and just, you know, doing better when you know better. So
what I'll say about that is I think that there's a lot of like power in living how you want to live, even if you are not yet including other people in that kind of like transformation or really trying to teach them, but like taking control of your own life for the people that come before you, for your younger cousins and your younger siblings to see that actually this is an example of empowerment and this is what it means, you know? So I think that's also being a leader in its own way. So I actually asked some people on my Instagram this, and I'm actually going to read out some of the answers. My God. And you know what? I love this for us. I love that we are all trying to change and we want to bring in new traditions and so I'm just going to read them really quickly so that we can just like get into it. First one is making personal changes my parents wish they made, like self-prioritization. And I guess that looks like not always putting the community first, but putting the family, the circle first. And I think we see it a lot because the older generation is very much into like people pleasing, and I'm not gonna like be too hard on them because I know that you have to please the community to be in the community to a certain extent. So that fear of like losing that community for them was so big. So I mean, I get that. Male child being treated better than the female child, no more her. Being financially comfortable, not having friends and personal social interactions outside of the family. This is an interesting one because people always tell you, oh, don't tell people our business, or don't tell people this, and don't tell people this. And I think it breeds a really conducive environment for abuse, to be honest.
I agree. I think even like growing up, I remember, I think I was like in grade three, my dad was like, trust no one. And I was just like, and I'm already an only child. I'm like, so who am I going to talk to? So I think it's just, I think people are very superstitious. I think people have also been through a lot. I think our parents don't tell us out their full stories, but like, yeah, I think that business of not talking to other people, like, that's not how it works. We need to change that.
Yeah. This one is exactly what you said. Open communication and no secrecy. Discipline methods. Having an abusive parent and having other family do nothing about it. Spending more quality time with your children. That's true. Like, I mean, I spent a lot of time with my mom growing up. I spent a lot of time with her, but in that moment I didn't understand that it was quality time because we never ever discussed like the emotional texture of anything. Like there wasn't like that intimacy, do you know what I mean? But when she talks about it now, she's like, oh, like, you know, I took you everywhere, like you were my favorite kid. I'm like, damn, I don't even remember it like that. Maybe it's because I was a child.
No, I think that's true. I think it also depends. Because, like, I know, like, with me and my mom, like, we have such a great relationship. So even as a kid, I always knew, like, okay, I'm building this bond with my mom. This is who I'm at. Though the difference was with my dad. I think my dad, like, I think he's given me so much in my life. So I'm very grateful. But it was that thing of, like, male figures in your life feel like, if I've provided financially, I've done my part as a parent.
Yeah.
And it's only in our adulthood that we've been trying to figure out our relationship, of which last year it was fight after fight after fight because we realized we don't really know each other well. So yeah, I think both parents, especially like depending on what your family dynamic looks like, they have to be there. It can't just be the moms or the aunts or everyone's got to play a part.
Yeah. Okay. Lol, Christianity. You know, that's another episode. I don't want to be strict. And if I get a divorce or my spouse dies, I'm not going to remarry. I don't want my kids to deal with the trauma that comes with having to deal with the step parent. That's a big
I mean,
sign.
I feel like,
I think
yeah,
it's
I feel like a lot
massive.
of older women, in Zim, they tend not to remarry after their husband dies. But I think it's funny because when men, when their wife dies, it's almost immediate that they get
Yeah,
married.
you know what? I get this person because the thing is, men are not good people. And if men can ignore and not take care of their own children, imagine your fucking kid, bro. Listen, I get it.
It's
Like,
a
it's
lot.
a big risk. So I get you saying, you know what? I'm just not gonna do it. Like,
I hear
parents or elders apologizing and admitting when they are wrong,
you. Yo.
shake the table. gender roles have to go, communicating with words, not beatings, continuous communication, black tax. It's another episode. I don't know much about black. You know what? It's fine. I don't want to get into it. deputy parents, i.e., older siblings having to parent because parents are absent.
Yeah, that's tough, yeah.
Yeah, so these are honestly some good ones. And the reason I asked people the question like this, even though I knew I wanted the episode to be specific about bringing feminism into the community, is because I just wanted to show that at the core of everything that everyone answered, all of these things are feminist principles: accountability, transparency, open communication, love, healing. These are all things that, like, among the feminist community, we encourage and we work on all the time. So, you know, some people will be like, oh, and this is feminism, but it's like, yeah, really,
But they're
though.
doing, oh, sorry. I had to like move my leg. But anyway, no, but I agree. I think this is why I think it sometimes is frustrating because obviously like feminism doesn't need to have labels for it to be feminism. But you see how when you talk to different people in your communities, how like abrasive they are about not you don't even say feminism, you just say accountability, openness, transparency. And they're like literally it's like how are you upset for doing the right thing? So like it's one of those things where I think especially with like people in traditional like Zimbabwean homes, for example, it's so difficult. But I think it's better to have tried than to not try at all. I feel like you have to have those conversations. You have to be the black sheep if you need to be, because
Yeah.
you can't continue not having those things or those principles in your life and suffer in silence because someone else is not gonna like it doesn't even make any sense.
So I guess I wanted to ask you, the first question that I wanted to ask you is, what are some of the ways that we can bring that kind of change, like norm change, into our families?
Argue with everyone. No, I think
Fair.
you know what it is. I think
Way to do it.
I think that's in my case, I've kind of had to do that. But I think how I started, I just had conversations with people in my community, and sometimes the best way to do this is to juxtapose their existence and their experience versus what it potentially could be if they had those feminist principles, or better yet, like seeing other people who've used those feminist principles, feminist or not,
Yeah.
and really like asking them, like, okay, does this make any sense? And like, I think for me, it's like, in my family, for example, we don't have a lot of male grandchildren in our family. I think because it's a very traditional family. Like I remember when my parents were young, my dad's dad, like my grandfather had very much said, the firstborn son is getting everything, you know, all that stuff. Like there was a lot of that patriarchy that was very much instilled. But
Yeah.
then now I always laugh with my mom. I was like, I think God saw what was going on and he's like, yeah, no male grandchildren for this generation. And all the men in the family, like they're men that have shown up, yes, But a lot of the people who are carrying the family, who are representing, who are doing the stuff, are the women. Almost everyone is doing their own thing. They're working, they're whatever, they're doing all this stuff. And they're successful, and they're being their true selves. At least they're trying to, because obviously you're within a family. And juxtaposing what our parents have been taught about, oh, this is how you should represent, how you should be in the family, and then looking at our reality, it's like, yo, this is not practical. We cannot be traditionalist in the sense of like, you can't expect me to come home, cook for you, wash your clothes, do this, all the stuff, when I'm also going to a 9-to-5. And in some cases, I'm the breadwinner. As a man, can you do the same? Can you actually do the same? Because you can't expect me to do the same. And it's like, I laugh because I sometimes see, like, you know, when people tweak, when it's like they hear that you're making sense, but they're so committed to what they've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
It's those conversations. So I think it's like starting off and really juxtaposing people's experience with what is on the ground and what is practical for us. And then constantly having those conversations and having those conversations.
Yeah.
And also being able to put boundaries as well. Because it's like, you can only have those conversations so many times until it affects your mental and emotional health.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Yeah. It's absolutely okay to be like, you know what? Peace be with you.
Yeah. Okay. I think I stand by my previous statement again that, like, sometimes even if you're not arguing, sometimes even if you're not even absolutely present in all of these spaces, just that mm-hmm. standing your ground of saying, I am not going to show up in spaces where, you know, gender roles are violently enforced. I'm not going to show up in spaces where it looks like this, it looks like this. I am going to live my life on my own terms. I think that still remains as an example to mm-hmm. other people. And of course, that always depends on the situation you're in. So I will say, as someone who is, you know, I have like my immediate family around me, and none of them are people that I have to sit around and argue with about like queer mm-hmm. rights or abortion or anything like that. So I count myself privileged.
Mm-hmm.
I count myself privileged. So this is me just speaking from my own experience and those people sharing with me that, you know, I never knew, for example, that this was possible. Being a Zimbabwean queer woman, there's a lot of people who I know, and I'm the only queer person that they know. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, no, and I agree, because like, even like, I feel like it's frustrating sometimes when you feel alone, because I think we've had this conversation about like building like community, especially in Zim, like especially as queer people, especially like it's frustrating. It is very frustrating. But like what you said about standing your ground, I think there's something that is so powerful, and like, as much as it's abrasive, it's so powerful when people are like, you know, literally trying to fuck with you because you stood your ground, and how when you stay consistent to that, like, the even if they don't agree with what you're doing, the level of respect you have, because I think I had many experiences like that last year. And I realized, I was like, I don't give a shit anymore. Like, go and do what you want to do. I'm going to go. And actually, I think I left home for a bit. Like, I was like, and it helped. But it's like, not everyone can do that. Because that was a big risk for me. Like,
absolutely.
But it had to happen, because I was like, life, long term,
this
is not going to work.
And this is a good like segue into the next question, which is like, what are some of the dangers of trying to bring those kind of changes into the family? Like, what are the dangers of trying to bring feminism into the family? You're trying mm-hmm. to bring this new, I don't want to say new, but I want to say this deeper consciousness that you have in other people. I will say, previously on this podcast, we have spoken about how like coming into your own queerness, embracing your freedom, embracing who you are as an mm-hmm. individual, and not doing what you have been told to do can cause a lot of isolation in your life. A lot of queer people don't even have the option of being with the families in which they were born in. A lot of queer people have to create their own communities. They have to live by and with chosen families, which I think honestly is just as powerful and just as amazing. But I think ideally we all would love to have great relationships with the people who we immediately know who are our first example of like everything. So definitely I would say that isolation is probably like the first danger, which is why some people elect to never come out. Like there are people who choose to never come out because their community and their family is so important to them that they are like, I would choose them over myself, because if I choose myself, then I cannot, then I have to these people. So I would definitely say every time you choose yourself, every time that you choose freedom, and every time you try to bring freedom to other people, the people who are benefiting from whatever it is that you have to give, whatever it is women and queer people have to give or whatever, they're not gonna like that, and they will always isolate you.
Yeah, I think the isolation is probably the biggest one. Like I'm trying to just go through my own personal experience. Yeah, there's something so dark about being on your own when you're trying to do something that's good. It can actually be like even like before I came out to even like my parents, I'd already accepted. I was like, you know what, I'm already out. I'm just not gonna say anything. And because I was like, I'm living my life. And then when I came home, I had the reality of like, there's a lot of like queer phobia, homophobia, transphobia, like in any family. But seeing it now, I was like, you know, and I had to have the conversation with my mom, and I was like, okay, so I'm queer and everything. And I remember in that moment, I really felt like I might not have a mom. And my mom was like, girl, I've already known, you're fine. Like, and I'm like, oh, okay. But it does, I think, to be honest, in terms of my family, I don't really talk about those things because I don't, I don't think it's about isolation for me. It's just the hassle of being bombarded with everything that you shouldn't be, everything that you're supposed to be. And it's very detrimental. So apart from the isolation, it's the mental warfare of constantly being told that you're on the opposite side of everything, being the black sheep, having to build community again. Because let's be real, people talk about, oh, we just build community. You need to build trust first. And let's trust is like is on in low supply in this day and age.
Yeah.
So it's really painful, I think, especially in Zim. So many people I know have just they and the thing is sometimes they don't even talk to someone who's already open and out or anything, because even just that is a Pandora's box they don't want to open, because it's just like, I don't want to do that. And I think it's really sad. I think, yeah, a lot of people are living in fear and their mental health is also suffering and everything, but that's you have to do everything you need to survive or to feel that. So it's like, yeah, I know it's hard. It's painful.
And I think even just going into, communities and telling women to stand up for themselves more, refuse and reject gender roles. I think then let me just segue into like the next thing that we were going to talk about. I guess it's kind of like connected, which is like, can radicalism like come at all costs, right? And I think we need kind of like a nuanced approach, like I'm saying, so you can't just go to people and be like, you know what, don't cook tonight, refuse to do the dishes, refuse to do this, because a lot of people and a lot of women, a majority of women out there, they're not even listening to this podcast, by the way, are doing things because of threat to life. They're doing things to survive, right? They're doing things to preserve their life, to preserve the life of their children, to preserve the life of those around them, because you can't just wake up one day in your extremely patriarchal home and start doing your feminism. Like,
Yeah, I like that we're on the same page, because I literally was gonna say violence. Like, I don't think people understand how violent being a defector, if you will, being someone completely on the inside, like it's you can even you being a friend telling your friend, yeah, you need to do better or you need to do better. You're not gonna grow up out of nowhere, like just because you told someone, like you need accountability, you need to, so I think violence, I think especially in violence is still such a huge tool of control and power in all facets of where everything is, and especially in the household. I think it's the reason why a lot of people, like, and Twitter people be talking about, like, oh yeah, I got beaten when I was a kid and I turned out fine, everything. And it's like, no, you didn't. Like, you're holding on to the abuse because you
Yeah,
didn't have
and
any
you
other option. So
saying it's okay to perpetuate violence onto other people because it was done to you.
it's
The vicious cycle. Just give it
it's terrible.
5 more seconds and you'll get there.
I think a lot of people w desire to be wanted and valued in their community. And so just the idea of going against the community really amplifies not only the isolation, but your self-worth of like, oh, okay, like if my community doesn't love me the way I do because I have very differing views, like, am I worthy? Am I enough? Am I doing all these things kind of play in your head? And I think it takes a lot of like reverse, like unlearning. Sorry, it takes a lot of unlearning to realize like just because you want to do better for your community and it may not be everything that they are used to doesn't mean that your self-worth has depleted or it's not enough, just whatever. Like you
Yeah.
shouldn't, yeah. So that's something I also thought about.
Yeah. I would say that patriarchy has really set it up so that a lot of women have nowhere to go if they opt out of it. So I imagine that for people who grow up in extremely harmful cultural and religious practices, and they go get married off at 14, with lack of access to education, lack of access to like independence, lack of like financial security. Should you decide to opt out of patriarchy? Should you decide to opt out of gender roles? Should you decide to bring feminism into your family? Like, what does that look like for your livelihood? What does that look like for the livelihood of the children that you may or may not have actually wanted to have? Like, who really knows, right? Anyway, this kind of leads me to my next question, which I already spoke about before, which is like, can radicalism come at all costs? So it's, and I think no, because already we know, for example, that women can face threat to violence if they are choosing to opt out of social norms. But I think also, like outside of that, sometimes as people that are in privileged positions, like when we try to bring in change, it's from a very like privileged perspective, and who actually bears the brunt of it is women. And you know, a small example of the lazy cousin. So people talk about, I'm gonna go to like the family events and I'm not gonna participate in any of like the gendered labor and all of that, right? And a lot of the times, and I mentioned this before, is I'm thinking, yeah, but chances are like your class was probably going to allow you to opt out of those things anyway, because in any community, the people with the most resources usually have to do the least labor. The people with money bring money, the people with nothing bring their bodies, right? Which is why a lot of people on social media are comfortable to talk about, like, oh, I'm gonna opt out, I'm gonna opt out. Of course, you're probably gonna opt out because your family probably bought a lot of these groceries anyway. But even, yeah, because the only reason you have a chance to opt out is because you are resourced enough not to need anyone who's asking you to do that labor, right? But what that means is that there's still someone who's gonna be doing that labor, whether it's because, and it's whether it's because they're a woman or whether it's because they brought nothing to this gathering, they're going to be doing it. So the less you do, the more they do, right? So is
Yeah, it's I
your
feel like
protest a protest, or is there just like additional burden on other people, on the other
Yeah,
women
I
of the
think
world
it's
anyway?
a double-edged sword. I think there's no winning or losing. I feel like because yeah, the whole, especially that example that you're given, you're right. At the end of the day, you not showing up because of your privilege or like you not doing work is going to double the amount for somebody else. And I think there is some feminist values in supporting other women in terms like in terms of like, no, I'm gonna help you out. But at the same time, you also have to hold your stance. I think it's complicated. I think that
Yeah.
like radical feminism is very difficult when you now think about like the mentality of a lot of people around you and what they're going through and everything. I do think that it's important to still push for it though, just because it may not seem like it's the most feasible thing to do. I think
Yeah.
you definitely have to push for it. I think it's a consistent conversation you have with yourself and other people who are also fighting the fight.
Yeah.
So be it, and I also think you have to pick your battles well. I think a good part of feminist work and like feminist like you know discussion and gathering of people is really knowing how to pick your battles. So at one family gathering you can be like, no, I'm not going to do this work, but I'm going to get a caterer. Like if you're privileged enough to get a caterer, you've helped everybody not do the work. If you can't do that, obviously you can be like, you know what, fine. Let me help out here because I don't like the fact that if I come out of here, this person is gonna struggle. And I know that this doesn't help in terms of like playing with patriarchy, but I would rather help my sister out than have her fall into this pit of doing everything else because she doesn't have the privilege. So I think it's like you have to really negotiate like every situation and every like experience that you have in order for you to be a good feminist. There's sometimes where you're gonna have to do things that may not necessarily go with your feminist thing, but it's not because you're doing it all the time. You're assessing what, in terms of the greater good, does this help the movement long term or not? And so I think that consistent, like picking your battles, consistent, you know,
Yeah.
navigating, and then even in those small instances, you can see when you've made an impact on someone. Like even just you could do or whatever, and this person was gonna have to do it on their own. I don't think people realize how so many people, even in acts of service like that are based in like gender roles and everything, just because you supported another woman, how much they appreciate that going forward. And then you can continuously like help them. Okay, this is what you know, this is what I feel, this is what I do, whatever, whatever. So it's picking your battles,
Yeah.
starting gradually, building community, like all these things that kind of have to play. So radicalism is something that you still have to push for, but also be empathetic to the other women around you that may not necessarily have that option. So it's like,
Yeah.
yeah.
I think I've definitely been the lazy cousin or the lazy sister or whatever. Yeah, I've been that. And my thing was, I didn't feel as though I was leaving my sister out in the dust. You know what I mean? But my thing is like, girl, we have the same resources. You don't have to do this, right? And I'm going to show you that you don't have to do this by my not doing it. Like, this is not a situation where I have to enable because you're in danger or whatnot. You know, you don't have to do this. You know?
No, I agree. Like I've
Yeah.
definitely been the lazy cousin as well. I've just been like, yeah, I'm not doing it. And they're like, ah, but when I Mandara, oh sure, I was you don't want to do this. I'm like, no.
No.
And I also think it's helpful when you like what you're saying, like you are the person who's helping the other person, like I'm gonna show you don't have to do this. I know there've been times when my mom is like, we're not doing this. And where my mom's at, I'm like, me, I'm not
Yeah.
doing it. Or because, and I, like, or like, or some of the, some people, yeah, I think sometimes you, like what I said, like thinking about, sometimes you have to be the one that makes people uncomfortable. And then yeah. other people, like the yeah. next family gathering is two of you. The next family gathering is three of you. The next family gathering is four of you. Until someone's like, I think we should save up for a caterer.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or someone. Like, you know, let's get yeah. a cleaning company.
No,
let's
change that. Like, one person at a time, one mind at a time. Yeah. Honestly. Yeah, okay. Well, this has been an interesting episode. I mean, I do think that this was also from a certain perspective. I think maybe there are people whose families and dynamics and communities are so healthy that they don't even have to do all of this. They can just sit down and just be like,
yeah,
we're feminists now. And that's it.
Yeah. Which is, no, I think if there's anything I can say to anyone who's like doing like feminist work or anyone who just wants to shake up the table in the communities, it is going to be uncomfortable. So don't run away from the discomfort, because it is going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that discomfort is so temporary and so small compared to the long-term gains you're going to get for your own self-worth, your own living experience. It's so much more worth it. Like,
yeah.
And I think once people push away the, oh, you know, what am I gonna, the discomfort, obviously granted you take it with a grain of salt depending on your situation, but I think a lot of people don't do a lot of work because of that discomfort. And I need to remind people, it is always going to be discomfort.
Always going to, and everything worth it at some point will mm-hmm. cause you discomfort. But thank you so much, and I think
thank
that's
you.
A perfect note to end this episode. You know, feel free to tag The Feminist Bar on Twitter, on Instagram. If you have any thoughts, the thing is, I see you guys tweeting, but I don't see you tag. I see it just because I follow you. Do you know what I mean? So go ahead, tag. And thank you, Nyasha, for coming on to this episode. It's been so good. Maybe
thank you for having me.
So much to unpack. So yeah, that's a wrap, and I will see you guys next week.